Memorable public speeches do require creative phrasing, but if that is all they have, they are indistinguishable from commercial advertising. Clear reasoning, specific to the situation, and grounded in universal ethical concern for humankind are indispensable if a speech is to be memorable. Martin Luther King's speech at the height of the U.S. war against the people of Vietnam is memorable for his phrasing, his cadence, the passion of his delivery, but above all, for his clear and frank identification of war, poverty, and racism as the three destructive manias of his country. And what can we say about Obama's speech? Not in Oslo, where he promoted the necessity of war while he accepted a prize for peace, but earlier at West Point, where he told the world why he was sending 30,000 more soldiers to Afghanistan, where they will be a scourge upon the people of that country. Con Hallinan, a foreign policy analyst, has examined carefully Obama's war speech. He joins me now from his home in California. Good morning, Con, and welcome back again to our program.
Good morning, Mordecai. How are you?
Fine. Obama gave three reasons for his escalation of the war in Afghanistan. And number one reason was his goal to defeat al-Qaeda and neutralize the Taliban. You say this makes no sense. Why doesn't it?
Well, if he's fighting the Taliban, if he's fighting the al-Qaeda, I don't know what he's doing in Afghanistan. There are, by American intelligence estimates, there are 100 members of al-Qaeda in Afghanistan. So he's putting in these extra 30,000 troops. Now, keep in mind that there are now, when you add up all of the American troops that are in, including a kind of a secret surge of 13,000 support troops a couple of months ago, we're talking about 109,000 American troops, plus, of course, the NATO troops. So, you know, you've got all of these troops searching out 100 al-Qaeda members, and even then, it's sort of silly. I mean, it's a 250,000 square mile haystack, and we're looking for 100 needles in it. That doesn't make a whole lot of sense. I think the other thing that, one of the things that disturbed me about the speech was that in it, he makes a reference to the evil of Nazi Germany, and then he jumps to al-Qaeda. Now, I don't consider al-Qaeda to be a nice organization. I'm absolutely opposed to it. But to conflate the most powerful industrial force in the heart of Europe with an enormous military to Al Qaeda, which is even less an organization than an ideology, is a sleight of hand. And I don't know how it went down in Europe, but the idea that we are going into Afghanistan and also Pakistan as well to defeat Al Qaeda really means what we're doing is we're fighting the Taliban. And we can't win that fight. And I don't care how many troops they put in there, certainly not 30,000. So what we're going to end up really doing is getting a lot of people killed, a lot of our own soldiers killed, a lot of Afghan civilians killed. It's just going to be a train wreck.
In his speech, the second major goal he advanced was that he wanted to increase the size of the Afghan army so they could control the country. You said that's a kind of gigantic illusion. Why would you say that?
Well, it's an illusion on two levels. And the first is a kind of an overall illusion, which is that there is a military solution here. That is that, okay, we're not going to stay there forever. We're going to essentially go through Vietnamization is what we're going to do. Afghan boys will be fighting the war as Vietnamese boys were going to be fighting the war in Vietnam. The problem with the army is that you just have to look at sort of what the facts on the ground are. We put the Afghan army at around 90,000, but the best estimate of what it as a really is an effective unit is it's somewhere between 43,000 and 45,000 soldiers. Of that, anywhere from 20 to 25% desert each year. So when you're talking about raising this army to 340,000, you're talking about a task which I think is probably impossible, but certainly is daunting. But the worst part about it is that building up the army right now, the Afghan army, is going to ignite the old civil war back in the 1990s, because the army is dominated almost entirely by Tajiks. Tajiks represent about 25% of the population. The largest group in the population are the Pushtun, represent about 42% of the population, and that's the base of the Taliban. The two groups speak different languages. The Tajiks speak Dari, the Pushtun speak Pashto. This is 70% of all of the units in the army are now commanded by Tajiks. And so what happens is that as far as the Taliban are concerned, as far as the Pushtun are concerned, not the Taliban, is that this becomes a different kind of foreign occupation. When the Afghan army moves into Pushtun areas, they're going to not be speaking Pashto, they're going to be speaking Dari. They're not the same people culturally. They're as far as the Pushtun are concerned, they don't really even consider them Afghani, since the only people they really consider Afghanis are themselves. So on the level that there's a military solution, this is an illusion. And also on the idea that you're going to build up this national army and that this national army is going to do the job is also an illusion. So on both of those levels, again, we've got another train wreck coming, and a lot of people at this point, including Matthew Ha, who is the U.S. chief U.S. civil officer in Zabul province, who resigned a couple of weeks ago, is that he feels that doing this is we're setting the stage for civil war, and that he says very explicitly that we could see a return to the civil war of the 1990s. So the second reason then is another train wreck. So as far as I'm concerned, we've had two train wrecks already.
And the third goal that Obama in his speech outlined was, and you mentioned Pakistan earlier, to forge a partnership with Pakistan. And you also think this is either based, as you said, on willful ignorance or stunningly bad intelligence. Could you explain that?
Well, yeah. What's happened is that the Pakistan army is currently fighting a wing, and that's what's important for people to understand. And this is why I said this about the intelligence. They're fighting a wing of the Pakistan Taliban, the Massoud Taliban, which is based in South Waziristan. And this was the group that last year there was a it took over the Swat Valley, and the Pakistan army drove them out of the Swat Valley. And it's also the group which was largely behind the bombing campaign that's going on all over Pakistan, particularly in the Punjab. But that's just one wing of the Taliban. There's another wing of the Taliban that is in North Waziristan, and it's headed up by a guy by the name of Hasif Gul Bahadur. And they not only don't have any quarrel with the Pakistan army, they have kept clear of the current fighting. And the Pakistan army has a kind of a ceasefire agreement with them. There's another section of the Taliban in South Waziristan, led by Mullah Nazir, who's not only not involved in the fighting, but considers itself an ally of the Pakistani government. And then there's the Afghan Taliban, whose a big section of its leadership is based in Quetta, the city of Quetta, which is part of Baluchistan province of Pakistan and very close to the Afghan border. They have made it clear, very clear, that they have nothing to do with the fighting that's going on in Pakistan today. They released a press release about a week ago in which they explicitly says, quote, "We are fighting the occupation forces in Afghanistan. We do not have any policy whatsoever to interfere in the matters of any other country. The U.S. and other forces have attacked our land and our wars only against them. What is happening in Pakistan is none of our business." So the U.S. wants the Pakistan army to attack the city of Quetta and to go after all of the wings of the Taliban, because those three wings, which are not involved in fighting with the Pakistan army, are involved in aiding or directly engaging in the fight in Afghanistan. Not only is this not in the interest, tactically, of the Pakistani government. I mean, they're already having enough trouble with one wing of the Taliban. They're going to take them all on. That means a fight all throughout the Northwest Territories and the tribal areas and Baluchistan. You know, that would be a crazy thing for the Pakistanis to do. But the last point is that one of the things that the Afghan Taliban has been very firm on is they want a withdrawal of all foreign troops. And that doesn't include just NATO and the United States. It includes Indian troops from the Himalayan Border Patrol, which is a paramilitary organization that is defending Indian projects in southern Afghanistan. Pakistan is very concerned about Indian activity in Afghanistan. India is one of the largest aid donors to the government. They have these troops here in southern Afghanistan. The Pakistanis have already fought three, and if you're counting a certain way, maybe four, wars with India. They had Indian troops on their south. Now they have Indian troops to the north of them. They're very unhappy about this. The Afghan Taliban says they're going to get rid of the Indian troops. So now, the President Obama wants the Pakistanis to pick a fight with three wings of the Taliban who are quite clear they're not interested in fighting the Pakistani government. In fact, they're critical of the current war that's going on, of the Taliban who are involved in fighting. And at least one of those wings calls for the expulsion of Pakistan's traditional enemy from Afghanistan and the neutralization of Afghanistan. Why would the Pakistanis want to do that? I mean, it not only makes no sense, it would be against their strategic interest. And that's why I think that either, well, I don't know, I call it willful ignorance and I call it bad intelligence. I think, again, it's sleight of hand. And I think what we've said is, you know, the problem here is in Pakistan instead of Afghanistan, when the problem is in Afghanistan. And there has been a real push now from a lot of different sources to expand the war into Pakistan, to increase the drone strikes, to actually send in troops to Pakistan. This is the same argument that we heard in the Vietnam War about Cambodia and Laos. And if we could only go after the bases, the Viet Cong bases and the North Vietnamese bases in Laos and Cambodia, we could win the war. Well, we did. The South Vietnamese invaded Laos. It was a complete, total disaster. The U.S. invaded Cambodia. It was a complete, total disaster, led to the overthrow of the Cambodian government and the rise of Pol Pot, and didn't make any difference whatsoever on the war. So, you know, that's the third train wreck. And while the president said this is not Vietnam, I'm sorry. This is a guy who is not... This is a very smart guy who has not carefully read his history. The parallels are never exact, because they are, in fact, parallels and analogies. But in all of the important ways, it is indeed like Vietnam.
Thanks for that analysis this morning, Con. I was reading something by Christopher Hedges where he said there are those who in the United States who are begging Obama to be Obama, but he is Obama, and the problem is with the begging, not with the man.
That's right.
Okay.
That's right.
Take care.
Thank you for having me, Mordecai.
You're most welcome. Bye-bye.
Okay. Bye.
I've been speaking with Con Hallinan. His articles regularly appear on the website Foreign Policy in Focus. You can find that website at fpif.org.